Hey, it's Sean from the Commander's Brew. Thank you for listening. I really do appreciate it. I value your listening-ship. If you like the podcast or the YouTube channel and you would like to support, you can go to patreon.com/commandersbrew. You can like and subscribe on YouTube. Click the TCG player link to order cards that way. Or if you're in Canada, order cards from the Wizards Tower and use our coupon code. Let's get to a couple ads. One fake, one real. Are you tired of your house guests or party guests or friends you've invited over leaving early when you don't want them to leave? Well, then you need to order Darksteel Industries' Baldur's Invisible Gate. It's a gate, but it's invisible, and we use Darksteel technology to send sonic waves around the perimeter that you choose so that no one can ever leave that area again, unless you decide they're allowed to. Darksteel Industries, making ethical products on Mirrodin since the year 261 in Mirrodin years. Don't worry about it. And now, the real ad from the Wizards Tower. WizardTower.com is a great website to go to get content like deck techs and strategy guides, that sort of thing. And not only that, if you're a Canadian viewer, you get the best deal of all. Actual money off your magic singles if you use our coupon code BREWDOUBLE. That gets you 5% off your magic singles if you spend $20 or more. And that's no joke. All right, today's episode's a fun one. It's an Elminster landfall, snow, flying, tokens, lots of stuff all at once. I think it's a fun one. But before I get to that, I usually do a few minutes up front to do a little bit of a banter. And I want to talk about Tasha the Witch Queen. I intended for this to be a Tasha the Witch Queen episode, but I, for the life of me, could not think of anything especially interesting to do with it. That doesn't happen too often. I'm sure I could have come up with something if I spent more time on it, but, you know, you got to produce episodes. You can't work forever on an idea that's a dead end. At some point, you got to cut your losses and realize, yeah, this one's not working out. And in case you feel like this sometimes, you know, maybe it'll be valuable to hear about a failed brew process. I'll read you what Tasha does. Tasha the Witch Queen is 3 blue-black. It's a 5-mana planeswalker that is allowed to be your commander. And the static ability is, whenever you cast a spell you don't own, create a 3/3 black demon creature token. And you start with 4 loyalty, and there's a +1 and a -3. The +1 is draw a card. For each opponent, exile up to 1 target instant or sorcery card from that player's graveyard and put a page counter on it. Okay, so we're exiling graveyards from each opponent. Cool, instants or sorceries, all right. And the -3 is you may cast a spell from among cards in exile with page counters on them without paying its mana cost. Now, this is where it gets tricky because your first instinct is like, oh, cool, I'm going to mill my opponents and then I'm going to cast stuff out of their graveyard. No problem. So then there's becomes like a mill strategy. So are we doing a ton of milling? Is that it? I didn't want to jump down the mill plan because, you know, a Dimir mill deck is fine. I don't know what I could brew to kind of add or change to that. And Tasha doesn't influence that. The thing that I realized after doing this is it's not enough to just mill your opponent's graveyards, I don't know, exile them with a Bojuka Bog, and then go ham with her abilities. First of all, it's a -3 ability to cast a spell. But the thing that I didn't notice until too late, I mean, I guess it wasn't too late, I eventually noticed it, was that they have to have page counters on them. And the only way to get page counters on the cards that you're exiling out of graveyards is by using Tasha's +1 ability. So here's what has to happen. You have to cast Tasha with 5 mana, +1 to draw a card, and then exile something from their graveyards. I hope that by now you have done some milling or they've cast some ramp spells or something that so you can exile something from everybody's graveyard. Oh no, it's not even everyone's graveyard. Ugh. Oh no, no, yeah, it is true. For each opponent, exile 1 card from their graveyard, instant or sorcery. So now you have to survive a full turn. If you nab and expropriate somehow, your opponents can see it under Tasha with the page counter, and they're just going to try to kill her. So, okay, so maybe they do that. Maybe now we're up to 7 mana. We've got that thing in exile with a page counter on it. We can now pay 7 mana, -3 to get that expropriate. That is way more work than I want to put in to do this. It's a full 2-turn cycle. I guess you save life damage because they're coming at Tasha and not you. But I mean, one hero's downfall and Tasha's gone anyway. So then the other angle is like, well, what if we go for the demon angle? Every time we cast a spell we don't own, we make a demon creature token. So then we can look at cards like Gauntes or Thieves of Sanities, these cards that exile things from our opponents' hands, graveyards, libraries, etc., and we get to cast them. That's a spell we don't own. That's kind of the only way to do that in Dimir. So that's how we're going to make a 3/3 black demon creature token. But then they don't fly, so they're not that good at swarming the opponent. And might I add, to swarm the opponent, what are we going to have to do? Make 10 of these? How are we going to cast 10 spells from our opponents that we don't own? It's hard. Tasha is hard to brew around. So I think you kind of want to do some mill and then just plus one as an incidental and then minus three if you get something awesome. I don't think you can reliably make a ton of demons because I don't think you can reliably cast a ton of spells you don't own. Anyway, that was my journey with Tasha. I think most Tasha decks are going to have to look similar. You're going to have to lean on some mill. And I don't think the demon plan is going to work out too strongly. It's just a little bit slow. Maybe if you're at a table with a really kind of low power, that could be nice. But you know what? Some people hate mill. And I suspect that at a lower power table, you might have newer players. And typically, players who don't like mill tend to be newer because after you've played a while, you start to realize mill isn't a thing or someone explained to you that it could still be in your deck. Anyway, you just run some flashback cards so mill becomes good for you. Ooh. Anyway, this is not a Tasha episode, though. This is an Elminster deck. Shall we? Okay, let's get into the deck tech. This is Elminster, Legendary Planeswalker, 3WB. That's an Azorius Planeswalker that can be your commander. 5 loyalty to start. You got a plus 2 and you got a minus 3. Also a static ability. The static is the coolest part. Whenever you scry, the next instant or sorcery spell you cast this turn costs X less to cast, where X is the number of cards looked at while scrying this way. The plus 2 is draw a card, then scry 2. So we're going to take a card and then we're going to rearrange the top 2. That's important for the minus 3, because the minus 3 is exile the top card of your library, create a number of 1/1 blue fairy dragon creature tokens with flying equal to that card's mana value. As you can see, the plus 2, we draw a card, then we get to pick the next 2 cards. If there's one we don't want or need that costs a little bit, we leave that one on. I guess we leave that one as the second card, because when it comes around to our turn again, we will draw the top card, then we will minus 3 and exile that second card, which we know about from our previous scry 2, and then we'll get a bunch of fairy dragon tokens if that makes sense for us. Got it? Let me tell you a little bit about Elminster. Elminster is from the Dungeons & Dragons world. I did a little digging. Elminster Aumar, born in 212 DR, is also known as the Sage of Shadowdale, a powerful wizard featured in many novels by Forgotten Realms creator Ed Greenwood. Thank you, Ed. Elminster is chaotic good, and Elminster is a multiclass. I know some D&D. I'm not deep into it. I don't know all the rules and I can't quote all the books. I mean, I'm not up on the latest editions. I know that you can multiclass. Elminster is multiclass, but does this sound right to you? Elminster is a level 24 wizard and also multiclassed as a level 1 fighter, a level 2 rogue, a level 3 cleric, and a level 5 archmage. That's ridiculous. That's too many things. Like, surely you can't do that in the game. You can be like 6 classes. I think this is what happens when they take fictional characters and try to put them into a role-playing setting. I'm going to go on a little tangent here. When I was younger, a friend of mine, we played a lot of RPGs. That's the reason I know a little bit about D&D is we didn't play one RPG for years. Over the years, we played many, many RPGs for like 3 sessions at a time. It's weird thinking back, like why we never stuck to anything. We played like all sorts of different formats, all sorts of different things. Anyway, I played a Street Fighter one. And it sounds cool. You get to be like, you know, my favorite Street Fighters maybe be like Ken or Ryu. But the problem is those characters were in the back of the book and you'd be like, oh, look at the character sheet for Guile. And they're like level 30. They have a million action points and they've specialized in all the abilities and the cool moves. And they have unlimited endurance, basically, and hit points. And the characters you create at level one are like, I don't know, I can barely punch and I can barely do this other like kick. But if I want to be stronger, I got to take away point source. It's miserable. I guess this is my tangent. When you take a cool IP and you want to bring it into another like role-playing game, it kind of sucks because you can't really be the characters already. I mean, I guess our DM, I forget what they're called, dude. That's the other thing. DMs have different names in all the books. What would this one be? The battle master or the like fight choreographer? I don't know. I don't know what it would be called. Anyway, back to the deck. Back to Magic. Elminster. Cool flavor, cool wizard, but arguably you don't have to play this game with caring that Elminster comes from something. This is just a card that scries and makes instants or sorceries cheaper as we scry, and we can make a bunch of flying dragon tokens. So that's cool. The first idea I want to talk about is little tiny spells that actually profit us mana because of the static ability. Something like Mystic Speculation is a single blue sorcery and it scries 3. That's all it does. It also has buyback for 2 generic, so you can pay a total of 3 to scry 3 and have it stay in your hand. That would be a net neutral that might matter for a storm. I'm not brewing a storm deck here, but the next card, the next instant or sorcery we cast after Mystic Speculation will be 3 cheaper. It has to have 3 generic, though. If we just cast something like a Ponder or a Preordain, those are a couple of sorceries that let you draw, shuffle, etc. But ultimately, I guess it's not Ponder. No, Ponder's wrong. You know, in my head, I lock them together. I think I'm thinking of Serum Visions. In any case, single blue spells that scry 2 and do a bunch of other like top, bottom, draw kind of business. So scrying 2 for 1 mana, scrying 3 for 1 mana. Our next spell, we've got a net gain. That's a little bit of ramp. These are traditional draw spells. We can look outside of that as well. If we just look for instants that say scry 2 that cost 1, I found one in white called Stand Firm. What is this from? Fifth Dawn. It's a single white. Target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Scry 2. In this deck, that's just it's like a cantrip for ramp. It doesn't draw a card, but it actually nets us 1 mana. We profit a mana by casting this. Chain to Memory, same deal. Single blue instant, target creature gets -4/-0 until end of turn, scry 2. Not the most useful ability, but again, it's in here to profit us mana. We go up in mana when we cast this. It is important to note that these are all instants and sorceries, so they do not combine with each other. If we cast a Preordain and scry 2, then we cast, I don't know, a Stand Firm. That Stand Firm would be reduced by 2, but it only costs a white, so we've kind of wasted that. Anyway. Let's talk about Deliberate. That's a neutral one. It's 1 and a blue. Scry 2. Draw a card. Fine. Replaces itself. It makes the next one 2 cheaper. These are ways to get through the deck a little bit quicker. If we have Elminster and we have a sorcery that has 2 generic, casting Deliberate, we get the card back. We get the mana back. So it's just a way to kind of thin the deck, as it were. Get through it more. Omen of the Seas is exactly the same. It's a 1 blue enchantment with flash. It enters, you scry 2. Cool. The key thing here, though, is this one is stackable because it is not an instant or sorcery. So we can cast this one, and so I guess you would cast the Deliberate first to scry 2. Then you'd cast Omen of the Sea to scry another 2. Now we've banked that 4. Now we can do something with it. But before I get to that, I want to kind of talk about the other ability. Looking at the top card of the library and exiling it and making a bunch of fairy dragon creature tokens. This is key. As long as you have big spells in the deck, but also I don't want to just cram in a ton of big spells because like if you draw them and you don't have Elminster and you can't put them back on the top, there's only one Brainstorm. So it's not easy to put cards from your hand on the top of the library willy nilly. It's not great to be stuck with huge mana intensive spells. So we're looking for spells that cost a lot on the card, but can be reduced. And lo and behold, Gate Colossus. It's an 8 mana artifact creature construct. It's an 8/8, but it does cost 1 less to cast for each gate you control. You might be thinking, this is an Azorius deck. Isn't there like 2 gates? No, my friend. Guess how many gates, if you know, there's no point in guessing. But if you don't know, guess how many gates we have access to now in a 2-color deck? 8. We have access to 8 gates. I'm going to mention, so obviously the Azorius Guild Gate you're familiar with, we've gotten additional ones for every color, like Citadel Gate and Sea Gate. Both of those tap for a white and a blue respectively, and another color that you choose. So we can make two more Azorius Guild Gates out of those. Then we got something like Heap Gate. It taps for colorless. We can tap to add a mana and pay one and tap this to add one mana of any color. I don't imagine we'll do that very often, but we can also pay one tap, tap an untapped gate you control to create a treasure token. It's a little bit of ramp if we're not doing anything at the end of our previous opponent's turn. Very cool. So there's eight gates. And the thing about Gate Colossus I didn't mention, did I mention it can't be blocked by creatures with power two or less? That's not the exciting part. The exciting part is we're probably going to cast this for like five or six. Okay, that's not a huge discount, but it's fine. But here's the key. Whenever a gate enters the battlefield under your control, you may put Gate Colossus from your graveyard on top of your library. So if we discard this, if something happens to it, that's kind of how we'd prefer to do this. We'd rather find ourselves in a position to put down a gate, put Gate Colossus on top of our library, minus three Elminster, and get eight fairy dragon creature tokens. That is a certified neat move. And so what if you're thinking to yourself, well, eight gates is fine, but it's not a million. What if we don't have enough gates? Is that going to be possible? Yes, it is, because of Navigation Orb. Three generic artifact, two tap, sac Navigation Orb. Search your library for up to two basic land cards and or gates. Reveal them, put them onto the battlefield tapped, the other into your hand, and then shuffle. It's slow, expensive cultivate, but we can get gates, which I think is great. There's one gate that lets you pump a creature by plus X for the number of gates you have. One gate adds more mana by having more gates. Is that Baldur's Gate? I don't even know what all the gates do. Yeah, Baldur's Gate is a legendary gate. Taps for colorless or two and tap, add X mana of any one color where X is the number of other gates you control. So you have to have four, or this has to be your fifth gate. You have to have five gates. So more than half your gates, not going to be a profit a lot, but it's in the deck anyway. So as I said, since we're going to be making a bunch of dragon creature tokens, flying tokens, and we're going to be casting a lot of instants and sorceries because that's just what we do, let's throw in Talaran Sky Summoner. Every time we cast an instant or sorcery, let's make a 2/2 flying drake token. Docent of Perfection is the 3 blue-blue insect horror with flying, where you make little, what is it called? What's the name of it? That little one mana creature that turns into a 3/2 flyer. Why can't I remember the name of it? Anyway, I'll think of it later. Delver of Secrets. It's a whole deck based on it. Anyway, every time you cast an instant, you make little Delvers of Secrets. They're like little 1/1s, but they turn into 3/2 flyers if you've transformed the Docent of Perfection by having three or more wizards. It adds up quick. And then lastly, Murmuring Mystic, 3 blue, human wizard, 1/5. Instant or sorcery makes a 1/1 blue bird illusion creature token with flying. So we're building up the character of the deck. We're looking to build a little bit of a token army. I think this is a Azorius token deck. So of course, we're going to put Aven Wind Guide, 2 white-blue for a 2/3 with flying and vigilance, and all of our creature tokens have flying and vigilance. It also has Embalm to come back for 6 mana in case it dies somehow. And if we're going to go tokens, it's probably worth just looking at Temet, Vizier of Noctemoon, 2/2, human cleric, legendary. And at the beginning of combat on your turn, you can give any creature token you control +1/+1 and unblockable. It embalms for 5. Do we have room for this? Do we want this? Is this going to really matter much? If we've got a swarm, like a just super wide board of flyers, maybe that doesn't matter. I don't think we're going to get a lot of creatures that have when this does combat damage effects. So take it or leave it. Other ways we can get a lot of tokens just by playing the game. Emeria Angel, 2 white-white flying. It's a 3/3 with landfall. Whenever a land comes in, you get a 1/1 bird with flying. Retreat to Emeria, similar deal. It's a 4-mana enchantment with landfall. You can either get a 1/1 white core ally creature, or all your creatures get +1/+1 until end of turn. Felidar Retreat, 4-mana enchantment. Very similar to Retreat to Emeria, but this one's a little bit better. I mean, it's unquestionably better. Then you can get a token that's a 2/2 instead of a 1/1. This time it's a white cat beast creature token. And your other landfall option is to not just give your creatures +1/+1, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature and they get vigilant till end of turn. Strictly better, Felidar Retreat is. But I mean, I guess we'll run both of them. And then it begs the question, are we a landfall deck? Yes. Yes, I think we will be. I think we will be a landfall deck. This is now Azorius tokens landfall. We're going to get a lot of tokens from our landfall as we cast spells as well. And it doesn't end there because, right, we still care about scrying. Retreat to Coral Helm is a 3-mana enchantment. With landfall, you get two choices. One, tap or untap target creature. I don't think that'll be a huge deal, but maybe we'll want to tap down an opposing flying blocker and get our big bunch of fairy dragons in, but also scry one every time we play a land. That's makes all of our spells the next spell cheaper with Elminster. Fearless Fledgling is a simple creature. It's a 2-mana 1/1, but every time we put a land in, it gets a +1/+1 counter and gets flying until end of turn. Just another good attacker. And Trove Warden, I think, is interesting. It's a 4-mana 3/4, 2WW, Cat Beast with Vigilance, but here's the landfall trigger. Whenever a land enters, exile a permanent card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard. And when this dies, put each permanent exiled with it onto the battlefield under the control of that card's owner. It has to come from your graveyard. I don't know if it's even possible for a card to be in our graveyard that we are not the owner of. I don't think that can happen. So why did they write it that way? I'm sure the rules people have a reason. Anyway, yeah, let's just keep digging stuff out of our graveyard, extra lands, extra stuff like that. I mean, do we care enough to mill? Do we run Hedron Crab, single blue crab, 0/2 with landfall? Whenever a land enters, target player mills 3. We can mill ourselves to set up a nice Trove Warden. And although we're done kind of talking about the official landfall cards, but there's a lot of snow landfall creatures. So now we're a snow deck as well. Merit Lage's Slumber, legendary snow enchantment, 1 and a blue. Whenever this or another snow permanent enters the battlefield under your control, scry 1. Snowlands are snow permanents. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more snow permanents, sacrifice this, and if you do, create Merit Lage, a legendary 2020 black avatar creature token with flying and indestructible. Not a bad. Heck, if we're going snow, we can throw an Icebreaker Kraken. This is an 10 blue-blue. This is a 12-mana spell. You get an 8-8, but it costs 1 less for each snow land you control. So, you know, maybe we get this down to 6. Maybe we get this down to 7. I don't know. When it enters the battlefield, artifacts and creatures target opponent controls don't untap during that player's next untap step, and you get to return 3 snow lands you control to their owner's hands and return this to its owner's hand. So once we can get this cheap enough, we can return a few lands, play a land or two, get a bunch more landfall triggers, put the Kraken back out, tap our opponent's stuff again. But also, more importantly, this is another one of those cards that is expensive as printed. So if we manage to scry into this on top, we might want to minus Elminster to get 12 fairy dragons. But in a pinch, we will be able to cast this for way less than 12. Some bonus snow cards. On Thin Ice, single white mana for a snow enchantment aura. You enchant a snowland you control, and when it enters, you kind of banish, you put an opponent's creature under this exiled until this leaves the battlefield. Very similar to Chain from the Rocks, whereas that one had to be on a mountain. This one has to be on a snowland. Let's talk about a couple of oldies. This is from Ice Age. It's a $1.62. Winter's Chill. What? It's blue X for an instant. Cast this spell only during combat before blockers are declared. They don't make them like this anymore. X can't be greater than the number of snowlands you control. Choose X target attacking creatures. For each of those creatures, its controller may pay 1 or 2. It's worded interestingly, but so they have to pay per creature. If they pay 0 for a creature, destroy it at the end of combat. If they pay 1, fog that creature does no combat damage. And if they pay 2, the combat for that creature goes as planned. They do the normal damage, etc. X spells are very interesting in an Elminster deck because we can get the scry pretty low. We can get the cost pretty low by doing a little bit of scrying. So this X is capped, however, can't be greater than the number of snowlands you control, but we get to target which creatures. And if our opponents, for some reason, decide to spend a bunch of mana before they go into combat, we can sort of say blue X, destroy X creatures if they're tapped out. This is a very high upside. Another oldie is Sunstone. It's a 3-mana artifact. It has an ability to sacrifice a snowland, prevent all combat damage that will be dealt this turn. We can fog for 2 mana plus sacking a snowland. If we use the snowland we are planning on sacking as part of the 2, no problem. We've still got a bunch of, like, we don't have to use an untapped land or anything like that. I know we're losing a land, we're going backwards, but if we're at a point in the game where we're like, we need to just kind of fog a bunch, it's worth thinking about. That's why I bring it up. We probably want to run a sorcery like Battle Screech. It's 2 white-white, but quite frequently this will just cost white-white. Create 2/1/1 white bird creature tokens with flying. And then for flashback, you tap 3 untapped white creatures you control. Should be easy. We just made 2. If we've got one more, we can flash it back right away. And if Elminster brought that 2 down, we will have paid white-white to get 4 birds right now. 2 of them tapped, plus another tapped card. Not a bad. And then Release to Memory is another way to get a bunch of tokens all at once. 3 and a white, instant, exile an opponent's graveyard, and for each creature card exiled, create a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token. So now, see, we're talking about Hedron Crab before too, maybe now Ruin Crab. I forget which crab is which. One works for all opponents, one has to target a player, but now maybe we run both, and maybe we mill everybody incidentally. It's a risky move. Sometimes you're helping a player by milling them, but if you've got a Release to Memory on deck, that's not so bad. I want to spend a second and talk about generic scry stuff, right? We've got a scry on non-spell cards to make the most out of Elminster, to really make spells cheaper. And I think Crystal Ball comes down for 3. It's an artifact, but you only pay 1 and you tap to get scry 2. With Elminster, I mean, we have to pay for the artifact in the beginning, but 1 tap scry 2 means we're getting a net 1 back on that scry 2. I haven't been specific, but it does depend on you having a spell with at least 2 in its generic cost. If you don't have something in your hand, you're not actually getting that value. But in that case, 1 for a scry 2 isn't the worst. I think Jace Mirror Mage is worth running as well. 1 blue-blue legendary planeswalker, Jace, kicker 2, so we can pay 5 if it's kicked. And if it is kicked, you make a copy. The copy is not legendary, and the copy's starting loyalty is 1. So this one starts with loyalty 4, the other one starts with loyalty 1. They both are copies, so they both can plus 1 to scry 2, or 0, draw a card and reveal it, remove a number of loyalty counters equal to that card's converted mana cost from this planeswalker. That's a scry of 4 just off of these 2 things if we want. Elminster also scries 2 with the plus 1 ability. So if we've got both of these out here, that's a scry of 6, not to mention Crystal Ball or anything else like that. And, you know, if we started off with something like a Serum Visions, that first instant or sorcery does another 2. So we're potentially scrying for 8 here, getting 8 off of our next spell. Do we need Oath of Teferi? Do we want this card? It's 3 white-blue legendary enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you kind of flicker something else, exile another permanent you control, and return it at the beginning of the next end step. But here's the key. You may activate loyalty abilities of planeswalkers you control twice each turn instead of 1. It's a $1.50. I think if our commander is a planeswalker, it's worth considering. And also running into Jace Mirror Mage, now we're able to get a lot of scry easily, like an obscene amount of scry. It, you know, your Blue Sun Zenith becomes blue, draw 16 or whatever. I mean, if we're also milling with those crabs, we might be able to eliminate a player by making them draw all those cards. I love that move. I want to talk about other ways we can get multiple scry triggers without spending instants or sorceries. Rumor Gatherer is a pretty good card in the sense that it's a 1 white-white 2/1 with alliance. Whenever another creature enters, scry 1. If this is the second time this ability is resolved this turn, draw a card instead. So we're making a ton of tokens, especially if something like Elminster makes a bunch of dragon tokens. Let's say we make 5 of them. The first one is a scry 1, the next one is a draw card, and then the next 3 are more scries. So it's weird to think that I almost don't want that draw. I mean, I want that draw on there, but it's like kind of getting in the way. But anyway, if we're creating 8 tokens at once, we're scrying 7. So our next spell is 7 cheaper. We got to have a couple of expensive spells. And again, it's tricky because I definitely want to be able to cast this if I don't have my whole engine going. And I'm willing to stretch it a little bit for Devout Invocation. 6 and a white sorcery. Tap any number of untapped creatures you control. Put a 4/4 angel for each creature you tap this way. It's possible if we don't have a lot of creatures out that this card does almost nothing. But for 7 mana, I suspect we're going to get well beyond what that amount of power and toughness should cost. And those are big angels. And especially if this costs just white. If this costs like white or two, I don't mind getting two angels for three mana for something like this. And then we got to consider Approach of the Second Sun. It's a six and a white win condition. It's a sorcery. If you've played with it, you know how it works. It's a little bit complicated if you read it as printed, but basically you cast it once, then you put it seven down in your deck and you gain seven life. And then if you cast this for the second time from your hand, then you win the game. So if you're this comes up sometimes, if your opponents want to counter this, countering it the first time, you won't get seven life and it won't be put back in your library, but it will count as being cast. It was put on the stack. That's all the first condition means. The second condition is if you cast it from your hand and it has to resolve for you to win the game. So if your opponents want to counter this, I guess there's merit to countering it the first time because then it's in your graveyard and we'll have to work a lot harder to get it back. I actually haven't built in a way to get it back, so that would work in this deck. But the second one is where you really want to counter it. In any case, this is a seven mana sorcery. I'm hoping we can get this much cheaper. But as I said, like if we're able to scry six to make this cost one, guess what? We're scrying six. So that means this is just two cards away. And then we'll just uptick Elminster again, draw it again, and it's even much cheaper. There might be a way to do all of this at once if we kind of manage our business right in one turn. That's incredible. Okay, I've got a super special neat move that I'm saving until the very end. This is the last kind of thing I'm going to talk about before I thank the Discord people. Settle the Wreckage is two white for an instant. Exile all attacking creatures target player controls. And that player may search the library for that many basics, put them onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle. We've got a ton of little flying tokens. It's what this deck was built to do. So I think we can look at Settle the Wreckage as a possible ramp spell. If I'm swinging in with 8 1/1 tokens, great. I'm going to now get 8 lands into play at once. If I have at least one landfall thing that makes tokens, I'm getting all of those tokens back and I've ramped myself by 8. Maybe I'm going to do some damage. Maybe I'm going to wait until the end of combat step. It's still combat, but it's after damage. So I can still do damage. Like your opponents never cast Settle the Wreckage this way. They want to prevent the damage, but I can swing with all my tokens. Wait until damage has been done. Maybe you've eaten a couple of tokens. Maybe a couple of them got blocked. So maybe I went from 10 tokens to 7 tokens, but I did the damage. Then I ramp for 7. That's not bad too. And I'm going to get 7 tokens back. More than 7, man. Imagine you had Felidar Retreat and like Retreat to Coral Helm or something like that. Felidar Retreat can either make 7/2/2 cats or put 7+1/+1 counters on the remaining creatures I have, or a combination. Retreat to Coral Helm is just stacking the scries or untapping some of my team if I want, tapping your team down, the player that's like behind me, so that, well, I guess they would have to be ahead of you so that they can't swing back because I'll just tap their team. Anyway, Settle the Wreckage, super neat move to use it on yourself as ramp. I've always wished to do this and have never had a deck that made sense for, but this is the deck. Oh man, what a tour, what a trip, what a journey. I love this deck. I say that a lot. I feel like a broken record. I feel like a broken record saying it. I hope you're not bothered by that. I hope you don't think I'm being disingenuous either. I truly do. I love all these decks. They're like my children. And I could not do this without the help of the Discord. Groove Chicken, Chiefy, J-Mom, Pips Don't Lie. Thank you so much for helping out. I really do appreciate it. And to everyone listening, you keep being you. The world is a better place for it. I'll see you next time.